Oh my God, there we go. That's a more authentic start than what we had last time, guys. I can't even lie to you. I just recorded 15 minutes of this episode, deleted it, decided I fucking hated it, decided I was bored, and I sounded, I don't know even what I sounded like. I wasn't me, you know? I was trying too hard. I was the type of person that I hate. I was a thirsty, snotty-nosed, try-hard. And so I deleted 15 minutes of perfectly good material that I was probably too judgmental about, and we are starting again from square one. And I think that the fact that I had to let out a roaring burp right as I pressed record is a sign from a higher power that I am doing the right thing. Now, hi, guys. I have to tell you, in the almost, wow, that is crazy, 2 years that I've been doing this podcast, I have never relished in the setup process as much as I did today. The doing my makeup, putting on an outfit, setting up the camera, getting the lighting right, opening the window, do we do a ring light or no, setting up the mic, setting up the volume, adjusting the levels. I usually dread that. I'm not good at it, and it's very time consuming, and I am somebody who likes to, bam, just get to the big stuff, get to the juicy stuff. But today I really, really enjoyed it. Why? Because I was really excited to sit down in front of this microphone. I didn't release a podcast episode last week because I was so busy with the stuff that I was doing in California, which we'll get to. And it wasn't like a second thought for me to say, okay, I got to take a week off because otherwise I'm going to get burnt out. But I don't think I quite realize how much I have come to depend on this show as much as I know some of you have come to depend on it. I think that the world is so crazy and so uncertain and so lonely and so uncomfortable right now that having something that you can really rely on is a gift. And even if I, you know, haven't made you guys die of laughter with every episode, or even if there are certain ones that you've thought were a waste of time, or certain ones that I've recorded where I've been like, ah, this isn't my best work, just having the opportunity to sit down and do it, it's essentially... it's not a free therapy session. Let me tell you, kids, on the business side of things, it ain't free, but it is certainly cheaper than what my therapist has told me is a socially acceptable price to be paying her every time we have a session. And it's nice to feel as though I have like a time and a place and a space where I can come and I can sit down and I can just let it fucking rip. And I'm sure it's the same for you guys listening to me, unless some of you just listen out of hate, in which case you might as well just write me a hate note and send it to my house in a box full of anthrax. Haha, don't do that. I'm joking, please. My parents are lawyers and they will fucking kill you. Anyway, anyone not following me on Instagram right now, at this point, I'm personally offended. It's been a long time of doing this show. And look, I understand not everybody is interested in seeing what everybody else is doing with their lives and analyzing their fit pics and watching their low-hanging fruit comedy videos. However, if you listen to this show and you don't follow my Instagram, that's just like a little weird because the two of them are so intertwined. But for the sake of politeness, for those of you who follow me on Instagram, you will have seen that indeed I spent the past 2 weeks in LA, specifically going to Trump rallies. Now, I got this idea during a walk in Soho with a friend of mine. Well, actually, I was walking in Soho. I was on the phone with a friend of mine who lives in LA and is a photographer and is very much into exploring subcultures and chaos, really. And, you know, I was talking to him about how I wanted to be able to contribute to the political conversation in some way, but I really didn't know how to do it because there was just clearly no need for another, you know, attractive white woman to post a thoughty picture of herself and use it as an opportunity to ask everyone to vote. Now, did I make a pair of underwear with vote in rhinestones in big letters on the butt? Yeah. Will I probably photograph myself in them just for shits and giggles? Yeah, I will. But in terms of actually making a difference, I knew that that wouldn't do anything. Because, and we'll get to this, but I've come to realize that even for people who are professional politicians, it is incredibly difficult to convince people to do stuff that they don't want to do, especially when it comes to the current political state of this country. I'm going to sneeze. You know what? Let's keep that in there for authenticity purposes. Stars, they're just like us. God, the only thing that's a star about me is the barrette, the children's barrette that I'm wearing today that I purchased at Claire's Accessories. Anyway, I was complaining about the fact that I didn't really know how to help in a meaningful way. And my friend, I forget how it came up, but he somehow brought up that there were these Trump rallies that were happening all over LA. And I was like, what? You know, because not only are we not seeing that on a big scale in Manhattan and Brooklyn, but the idea of, you know, people congregating in really large groups, and because wearing a mask has become something that is distinctly liberal, you know, the idea of people gathering in large groups and not wearing masks was just like, to me, that's xenon, you know, that is a faraway fantasy land. And so I started thinking, I was like, oh my God, you know, I gotta see this. And then I started thinking, oh my God, I think there's a lot of other people who need to see this. And so on a whim, I booked a plane ticket to California, stayed with my godfather in Santa Monica, and spent what was supposed to be 2 weeks, I mean 1 week, and became 2 weeks, chasing Trumpian people around. And it was amazing. And I learned so fucking much. And that is what we are going to talk about today. But before we get into that, I wanted to just share one funny story with you, because this is the Health is Hell show after all. And we did have a lot of episodes in which I talked about my druggy and drunken mishaps. And this one is definitely no exception. I think this is both my highest high and my lowest low. I say that while staring at my black and blue and purple and crusted knee that did not get away unscathed in this accident. So basically, I have three of my best friends from college who live in LA, and they're all gay, and they have very big personalities, and the three of us get along like a house on fire, and it's always a shit show when we're together, but in the most like loving and supportive and beautiful way, but it is undoubtedly a shit show. And we decide that we're going to have a big night out, which of course in this day and age is dinner and, you know, getting alcohol at a restaurant. Now, I don't drink that much anymore. I've been very open about being off and on sober for literally years. And I do drink currently, but not heavily, not the way that I, used to, and certainly not like frequently, and certainly not at the level that my friends do. But I was like, you know what? I have had a really long week with not only going to these rallies, but also with editing them. And I deserve to let loose. But I have found historically that when you go into a night telling yourself you're gonna get fucked up, not only do you get fucked up, you get really fucked up. It's almost like if you go into doing hallucinogenics thinking that you're going to have a bad trip or with fear, your brain kind of consciously or subconsciously steers you in that direction. And every single time I have headed to a night out going, you know, I'm going to get fucked up. I want to have fun tonight. Not that those two things are mutually exclusive, just FYI, for the sake of being a good influence, but that's what I thought. And so I show up at my friend's house. We are pre-gaming our dinner. That's how desperate we are for any smidgen of nightlife. So he has a bottle of wine on the table. He offers to pour me a glass. I tell him I've had a long week. Does he have anything harder? He doesn't have any tequila, but he does have Jack Daniels. A bitch loves Jack Daniels. He pours me a cup of Jack Daniels on the rocks. The serving is about three times the recommended serving. There's no mixer in it, just how I like it. And I start going to town while everybody else is having wine. So we have a drink at the apartment, or in my case, like three. Then we get into the Uber and we go to the Roberta's Pizza pop-up. Now, for those of you who are either don't live in New York or are not familiar with Roberta's Pizza, Roberta's is a pizza place. I was gonna call it a joint. It's really not. It's like a very hip place that opened up in Bushwick on a street that's like covered in graffiti, and the clientele is a mixture of like, you know, uber hip Brooklynites and young attractive parents and their attractive babies and musicians and bartenders and just like the whole thing. It is like the definition of Brooklyn hipster. However, the pizza is very, very good. In LA, in Venice, of course, it is a whitewashed version, like a minimalist decor, and there's sports playing on a screen in the background. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, of course something comes to LA and loses all of its soul, which at that moment I should have realized was also foreshadowing for me losing my soul. Before going to meet my friends, I was cleaning out my bag and I discovered a mushroom chocolate. It was in a Coke bag. Not a bag that I used for cocaine. I did not do any cocaine out of this bag. I swear on Grandma Jean's life. I just know from my time on the streets that that is the kind of bag that is used for cocaine. And a mushroom chocolate landed in there. Landed. I packed it for my trip. And I was like, oh, this could be fun for tonight. And so I brought it with me. And I told my friends at the pregame that I brought the mushroom chocolate, and they were like, oh, maybe at dessert, we'll like take a little nibble. We have a round of drinks at the house. We have a very fast round of drinks at Roberta's. Of course, my three baby gays get skinny margaritas, and Big Daddy over here gets an old fashioned. And once we finish that round of drinks, I'm like, okay, is it time to eat the mushroom? I first ate this mushroom chocolate a couple weeks back at dinner with another friend here in New York, and I had the equivalent of like two chocolate shavings. Like, you know when you get an expensive slice of cake, or like a slice of cake from like a Viennese bakery, or just something that's kind of like poncy, and they do the chocolate coils on top of them as decoration? I had the equivalent of like two of those, and I was fucked. Not in a scary way, but like high, like not hallucinating, blurry vision, body floating. Like, I mean, I was on drugs. And this was at a much more casual dinner here in New York. So I warned my friends and I was like, you guys, this is really strong. You can always take more. You can never take less. I'm warning you, please, let's go easy. And of course, the three of them bitch at me going, fuck you. We have high tolerances. We can handle this. I'm not a little pussy bitch. I'm like, oh, not, okay. I hear you. And so we all end up splitting the chocolate four ways. This is not a large piece of chocolate. It's not a chocolate bar. It's a chocolate square. But like I said, this shit was strong. So the drinks that we had absorbed into our system. Someone decides it's a brilliant idea to get a round of shots. Then they get another round of skinny margs. Daddy gets another old fashioned. And the next thing you know, we are fucked up. We are fucked up. In fact, I am blacked out. I am blacked out in the middle of a pizza restaurant in the middle of Venice, California. I remember screaming a little. I remember being very animated, but I don't remember anything else other than standing up on my walk out, tripping and eating shit right onto a woman's feet. Like I basically fell into this table of other diners, but luckily I didn't fall onto their table. I just fell at her feet, almost like in a grandiose romantic gesture. I ate shit in front of these women, this woman's feet. And of course, everyone at the table is like, oh my God, are you okay? What's wrong with your friend? And I'm just cracking up because like, I don't know what's going on, but I know what's going on enough to feel embarrassment. And I look down and I'm wearing this iconic pair of, you know, like PVC pants, and the pants are scuffed at the knee, which lets me know that if that thick material is scuffed, my knee is fucked up. And I get up and I guess I'm walking kind of like wobbly, and I'm screaming and the whole thing, to the point where the door guy for a pizza restaurant turns to my friend and goes, your friend is a little much. And again, bless my friend, he turns right back and he goes, I think you're a little much. But yeah, once we got home to the apartment, I look, both of my knees are scuffed and bleeding. I have to put Band-Aids on both of my knees. Now it's been about a week later. My knees are the color of a ripe, juicy plum. And I had a serious blackout in a pizza restaurant. So I don't know if this is like a hashtag COVID quarantine situation. I don't know if this is hashtag new normal or if this is hashtag Allie, there is a reason that you stopped drinking. Please, for the love of God, go back to not drinking. Or just, you know, don't take too many mushrooms and then mix the mushrooms with alcohol. So that was just a story that I feel as though you all really needed to hear to make yourselves feel better about your lives. Plus the fact that I spent $18 on a quote-unquote activated smoothie three times. If I could do math, I would multiply that and tell you the total amount that I spent. That's not including regular normal person coffees. That is just activated coffee smoothies from the famous health store Erewhon. But the fact that I spent $18 on a coffee beverage is just, that's another. There are no words. How often am I at a loss for words? But there are no fucking words for that. Now that we got the froth out of the way, let's talk about the important stuff. And the important stuff is what I learned during my time at these rallies. Now, the thing about going to these rallies is there's one of two ways that you can do it. You can go in as a liberal person who is asking conservatives for their opinion, or you can go in disguise. And I never like lying to people. That's actually one of the things that I have the least amount of tolerance for. I don't like lying. I don't like faking, and I don't like posturing. However, our country has become so polarized, and in certain parts of the country that are pro-Trump, including apparently Beverly fucking Hills right off Rodeo Drive, there is so much anger that is directed from Trump supporters towards what they perceive to be the quote-unquote liberal elite. And so both approaches would have been risky because my friends who I filmed this with and I were terrified. We were totally terrified that somebody was going to like chase us out of this rally with tiki torches if they found out what we were doing. I am not exaggerating. We were like, someone is going to hit us in the face. There's going to be a mob that surrounds us. We are going to get fucked up if these people find out that we are here and not on their side. And the first person that we interviewed the first day that we went to the Beverly Hills rally was, he was weird when we were talking in his interview. Something was clearly wrong with him, but he didn't seem unstable. And then I guess I said something that slightly rubbed him the wrong way. And for the rest of the day, every time he would see us go to interview somebody, he would like scurry off to another person who was at the rally, whisper in their ear, point to us, and basically tell them not to speak to us. So I don't know what the trigger word was, or if he was just distrustful or fucking whatever it was. But the fact that he was running around basically branding all of us with a scarlet letter, you know, you can imagine what happened if we were openly Democratic. So I decided to wear a slutty little red, white, and blue outfit because I thought that could be distracting, if nothing else, and an American flag mask. Wearing the mask in and of itself was a huge gamble at this rally, but somehow the image of the flag has become a Republican symbol. It's become a Trumpian symbol. And so something as simple as wearing an American flag immediately lets people know that you are quote unquote on their side. So my approach to making this video was going up to people and simply saying to them, "Hi, I am making a video for voters on the fence. Can you talk to me about why you like Donald Trump?" I didn't say that, you know, I was some sort of, you know, raging Republican. I also didn't tell them the truth about what this was going to be used for, but I just told them earnestly and openly, "I am making a video for voters on the fence. Talk to me about how you feel about Trump." And then, of course, the conversation always escalates and goes wherever it wants to go. So we all start talking, and you know, I have a massive list of questions that I knew I could refer to, but there was really no need for me to pump these people with questions. Usually if you ask them one or two good opening ones, they would just let it rip. And this was the first big thing that I came to realize about what is appealing to so many people about being a part of the Trumpian community. It's not even a party anymore. It's like a community because a lot of Republicans don't associate with Trumpians. And it's that because this is a group that is widely despised in America, you know, for as many Trump supporters as there are, it has become socially unacceptable in a lot of parts of the country to be loud and proud about your support for him, because you essentially get labeled a white supremacist, or you get labeled, you know, somebody who has really bad values. And so because this is now a community that's more or less operating underground, it's become a fraternity. It really has become a fraternity in the sense that it's very secretive and there are no hazing rituals per se, but there's definitely a code of conduct that you follow. And these people who are considered to be underdogs, or who feel like underdogs because they are not, society doesn't like them. I think once they find each other, it's like this tremendous sense of relief. Being in the Trump community is a sense of relief in finding other people who see the world like you do. And a lot of those opinions about, you know, the lens through which you see the world are really unpopular. QAnon theories, the child trafficking theories, you know, the whole idea of Democrats sucking the blood out of children, and, you know, Hillary Clinton and Obama and Joe Biden's ties to all sorts of radical organizations around the world. And then on top of that, like publicly admitting that you're racist, publicly admitting that you don't support BLM, publicly submitting that, like, admitting that your religion is so important to you, even as a woman, that you are willing to overlook human rights for the sake of keeping this country godly, quote unquote, whatever that means. And so when these people find each other, it's like this tremendous sense of relief and celebration and also openness. So I think that there are a lot of reasons why these people were so eager to talk to me. I think that part of it was that I am a woman, which I know a lot of people like to say is debilitating and holds you back in life, but there are certain situations in which people are much more comfortable speaking to a woman, especially a woman whose, like, red bra is showing through her white shirt. And I also think that just kind of, you know, smiling and nodding along with what these people were saying made them feel like they had permission to really be themselves. And through my conversations that I had with them, I came to realize that it's not Trump who's the problem. It's the same way that people who blame Trump for making this a racist country are idiots. This country was founded on racism and capitalism, and those things go hand in hand, because let's remember that slaves were a commodity. Slaves were objects, and slaves were bought and sold. And the whole, I mean, also taking the land from the Native Americans. I mean, racism goes back as far as we can remember. However, what Donald Trump did do is make racism mainstream. And with that, he also made it mainstream to be very, very shamelessly, fearlessly aligned with very extremist values. So I spoke to all sorts of people. I spoke to Black people, Latin people, Asian people, women, men, of course, plenty of white people, gay people. And the consensus was kind of the same across the board, which is, yes, Donald Trump is obnoxious. Yes, we have issues with the way that Donald Trump carries himself on Twitter and the way that he treats people and his temper and his anger. And yes, we agree that he is not a particularly likable person. However, he aligns with X. And whoever aligns with X is my president. Now, for a lot of people, X is religion. Let's focus on that for a second. So many people in this country are so God-fearing. And I've spoken about this in past episodes that I've done where I talk about religion. The Escaping Religion episode from a couple weeks ago is a great example. While I myself practice atheism, I consider myself to be an atheist Jewish person, I do understand why finding God is an important part of many people's lives, whether they are in recovery and are sober and they need a higher power to make them feel like they can get through, if they're suicidal, struggling from poor mental health, or if they are poor or come from an unstable socioeconomic background, and believing in God is a way for them to believe that life is filled with more than what they've been given. I am 100% in support of people living with the idea that there is a higher power, that there is more than just them and their own needs and their materialistic goals. However, I think that when people live their lives so in fear of and revering a figure that is not walking on planet Earth as a functional everyday human being, it's a problem, because a lot of people are not voting for the rights of human beings walking on this earth. They are voting in favor of what an ancient, debatably fictional text has told them are the codes and ethics that apply to 2020 and 2021 and going forward. For example, abortion is a big subject, and I know that a lot of people think that abortion is killing babies, and that is that, and we cannot support it. It's a life, and you cannot, it's murder. You're murdering a baby in the womb. But let me ask you, does God really intend for women to be raped and then have those babies, and have to raise a child that is the product of an unbelievably traumatic experience that they had against their will? Is it God's will for women to be raped? Is it God's will for, in some really dire situations, women to have babies that were created by family members because they were sexually assaulted by family members? Is it God's will for people to have children who are going to have severe, debilitating mental and physical illnesses? You know, there are ways to tell biologically through tests if a child is going to suffer from, you know, autism, Asperger's, cerebral palsy. Not to say that people who have children who suffer from this have anything to be ashamed of. They don't. I actually think that those people are really heroes and are, if God does exist, those are the people who, you know, have know something that the rest of us don't. But for people who on their own will make the decision that they do not want to have a child that is going to be difficult to raise, expensive to raise, and more importantly, is going to really struggle in this world. This child is really going to fucking struggle with learning, with being accepted, with feeling human. Is it God's will to force a woman to have that child? And this was the big thing that was missing from the conversation with both these men and women who were obsessed with making abortion illegal. I don't think they were considering that abortion is really important for people who get pregnant against their will, or whose pregnancies are not what they think they are going to be. It's not just horny, spoiled people having unprotected sex and left and right running to Planned Parenthood to get an abortion, even though obviously women have the right to do that as much as they damn well please. But that was really interesting to me on the religious front, is that, you know, people were focused on one sub point of one point. And despite not liking Trump, their desperation to align with being anti-abortion is leading them to give the vote to him, despite the fact that Donald Trump clearly through 100,000 of his actions does not support the best interests of women. And then also there are ethnic groups in LA, particularly a lot of Armenians and Jewish people. And both Armenians and Jews are obsessed with what Donald Trump is doing in terms of foreign policy. Now, let's look at the Jewish example, right? Trump moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem gave Jewish people the idea that Donald Trump was some sort of Jewish hero. But what about the people in America, the Jewish people in America, who are experiencing tremendous acts of hate and discrimination? When I did my episode about racism in the thick of the Black Lives Matter movement, I talked a lot about how I, as a Jewish person, have a serious problem with Jews aligning with Black people in the sense of saying that their experiences are the same as Black people, that, you know, Jews were the original slaves and have been historically disenfranchised. And, you know, my answer to that is, well, modern Jews come across as white and have money and access to education, and getting an education leads them to have even more money. And now Jews are you know, known to be a very, very wealthy subdivision of human beings. However, that is not to say that anti-Semitism does not run rampant through this country. And so for all my Jewish brothers and sisters who are so fixated on what is happening in Israel as it pertains to an ongoing battle over who deserves a plot of land that is supposedly holy. Okay, I understand that Trump moved the embassy, but what is he doing to stop hate crimes here, where we all actively live? Look, I know a lot of us feel as though our spiritual homes are not in whatever state we live in. My spiritual home is certainly in London, but I'm not voting to impact what's happening in London. I don't live in London, you know? And it's just, it's hard for me to process, again, that people would overlook the immediate happenings of where they live in favor of larger religious power. So then, you know, the next thing that I noticed is the racist ideologies and how a lot of people are aligning with Trump, not because of his policies, not because of his so-called religious leanings, but because he has made it mainstream to be hateful towards people who don't look like you. And this is not just white people being hateful towards Black people and all, you know, people of color and ethnic groups, but especially Black people. Yes, that is a huge problem. Huge problem. But I spoke to many, many Black people at these rallies who spoke down on other Black people and spoke down on what qualifies as Black and why being mixed race is not legitimate, and Black people hating on Latin people, and Latin people hating on Black people, and everyone hating on Asians. And again, Donald Trump is not the person who created this type of outlook, but he is a president who made it very mainstream to take your private hatred out onto the street and shout it through a megaphone for everybody to hear. A lot of racism is a part of fear, or a lot of racism is a result of fear. It's not even a part, it's a result of fear. It's a result of growing up a certain way, surrounded by certain types of people, not being exposed to other types of people, absorbing your parents' prejudices and your grandparents' prejudices and what we see in movies and in books and on TV. But that's obviously another thing that I have a huge problem with, is that people are voting not in the interests of America. A lot of people claim that their racist tendencies is because, you know, they want to restore America to order. They want Americans to have jobs. They want, you know, America to run smoothly and have reduced crime rates and whatever other bullshit they're spewing. And I shouldn't say it's bullshit because I think a lot of people are just not educated and do see this to be the truth. However, a lot of people who claim to be looking out for the best interests of the country are actually just operating out of fear. Fear of people who do not look like them. Fear of people who have a different God than they do. And that is so selfish, to vote out of fear. You know, I'm sorry. It's just like I'm sitting here thinking about this. And I am so shocked for everything I just listed. Even still, even with what I saw going to multiple of these rallies and speaking to the people that I spoke to, I am so shocked that so many people vote out of their own interests and not the interests of everybody. I guess that's just being a human being. Oh, and the last thing I'm going to say about the racist ideologies is, aside from hearing wild statements of racism coming out of the mouths of both white people and people of color still support Trump despite knowing that he is a white supremacist, despite knowing that the culture he's built centers around white supremacy. People of color seem not to care about this. Why? Because Donald Trump is the person who supposedly can pull the economy out of the shitter. And it all comes back to money. It doesn't matter that he's racist. It doesn't matter that he has expressed horrible opinions towards ethnic groups. What's really important is that Donald Trump reeks of money. He has the image of money. And really what we all care about the most is money. Now, in certain situations, this is totally legitimate. Fixing the economy, fixing our cities in the wake of coronavirus, oh my God, we are going to need a serious, serious plan for doing that. But when people talk about the economy, I found it wasn't so much talking about a COVID relief plan as it was referring to Donald Trump's image as a successful businessman. It was referring to his image as the host of The Apprentice, of a glamorous New York socialite who's had many wives and many children and has cheated on all of them with beautiful mistresses and wears nice suits and lives the high life. That is what people are talking about when they are talking about Donald Trump's ability to improve the economy. And for the record, I am not an expert, but the upturn in the economy started at the end of Obama, and it just gradually continued with Trump. Trump did not make that happen. But that's not the point. Again, I am not here to preach. I am here to expose and explore the truths that I saw. So talk about money and talk about the economy. Again, less to do with Trump's ability to be a smart economist for our country and more to do with the image that he exerts. But going hand in hand with the image that he shows of being this high-rolling bigwig, I am so confused by the term, the label, liberal elites. Trump supporters love to use the term liberal elites. For those who saw my video on Instagram, you saw the woman point her finger at my face and say, take that fucking mask off. That mask is a sign of submission to the elites. But Donald Trump is a rich New Yorker working in real estate. What makes anybody think Donald Trump is not the elite? Donald Trump is the definition of the elite, not just in financial terms, but in terms of white privilege, white heterosexual male privilege. And people love to shit on New Yorkers. I have gotten so much hate mail on Instagram from people saying, "Ah, oh, you fucking liberal New Yorkers think you know everything." That is Trump. So I found that to be really confusing. And maybe when they say elite, they're referring to, you know, the fact that Donald Trump is a politician who is not a politician. This is a man who had no traditional credentials to be president. And that is why a lot of people liked him. They liked that he was the everyman. He was an elevated version of the everyman. He wasn't someone who clocked many years on Capitol Hill preparing for this moment. Maybe that's what they're referring to. But again, I think it's hypocritical. I think it's hypocritical to say that Donald Trump is the one president who has ever been supportive of historically disenfranchised people simply because he himself is not a quote-unquote corrupt politician. Maybe not, but he is, for all intents and purposes, a corrupt businessman. I think it's fascinating that Biden's approach of taking the high road, you know, Biden trying really hard not to yell, scream, release smear campaigns, insult Trump like a fifth grader. Those are all acts of basic human decency. But we don't live in a world that is conducive to decency right now. Morals and ethics have flown out the window, especially when it comes to communicating with young people. Young people who have been reared on violence and crisis and hysteria and failure. And the material that we're seeing on social media, you get 60 seconds to make a loud, flashy impact. That is the type of material that people are used to. And Trump fits in with that perfectly. Trump is meme-worthy. Trump is GIF-worthy. Trump is retweetable. Even if you don't agree with what he's saying, he creates content by being himself. Joe Biden has consciously tried to not become a meme. And in a normal world, that is what a respectable politician should do. We are not living in a normal world. And I spoke to a lot of people and asked them the question, when you think Joe Biden, what's the first thing that comes to mind? A lot of people gave me absurd answers, which I included in the video, such as retard. But a lot of people also said, when I think Joe Biden, I can't think of anything. I truly draw a blank. I can't think of anything. What does he stand for? What are his policies? What is he going to do? When has he expressed his opinion? What is his opinion? This is not to say that Biden doesn't have them. It's just that Biden isn't screaming at the top of his lungs. And that is no longer the right approach in 2020 going on 2021. You have to scream at the top of your lungs. That's how social media works. If you want to be seen, if you want to be heard, if you want to be somebody, you need to be fucking shameless. And I found it fascinating that what a lot of, if I do say so myself, elitist Democrats perceive as Joe Biden being a respectable, polite guy, a lot of Trump supporters saw as being brain dead, complacent, boring, and a pawn, a puppet whose marionette strings are being pulled by the far left socialists. The reason they think that is because Biden has never come out, despite the fact that anyone who follows politics even a little bit knows that Biden is a tremendously moderate as far as Democrats go, because he has not spoken out with any loud opinions about being moderate. Everybody assumes that he is being controlled by the far left. Biden does not want to be controlled by the far left. Biden will not be controlled by the far left. Anybody who thinks that Biden and Kamala are the far left are delusional. But that's what happens when you don't fight to hold your place. And not only is Trump loud, but his followers are loud. They're loud on TikTok. They're outrageous on TikTok. They're loud and outrageous on Twitter. They're loud and outrageous on Facebook. They're loud and outrageous on Instagram. Young, impressionable people don't read anymore. They go on social media. And so when one party has 100 times the amount of content, and a lot of which is inflammatory or you know, based in conspiracy theories, and the other party isn't really holding their own, you can see why the Trumpian narrative has gone so much further than whatever it is the Democrats stand for. And that's another issue. Whether it's right or wrong, Trump supporters, Trumpians, not all Republicans, but Trumpians, have the same set of codes and values and ethics. They are aligned across the board. If you are a member of this community, you share at least three items from a drop-down menu. You see eye to eye on those three items, at least with everybody else who's at the rally with you. Even if it's something as simple as coronavirus is a hoax and we don't have to wear a mask. Or if it's something as big as being a white supremacist. There are many things you're going to have in common. The Democratic Party is a shit show. Nobody in the Democratic Party can agree. You have the far left, you have the socialists, you have the moderates, you have Joe Biden, who supposedly is a puppet. You know, when you compare Joe Biden to Bernie Sanders or AOC or Elizabeth Warren, I mean, and then Andrew Yang, when you look at the people who have come to represent the Democratic Party, it's not a political party. It's like a wild dinner party that I am hosting at my house. And it's like the people that I chose, I am putting around my table and sitting them next to each other for the sake of creating a good time. Like curating like a good dinner party where I know people are going to be drinking and some sort of argument is going to explode out. So there's no community feeling within the Democratic Party. On a local level, there's totally a community feeling. I mean, here in New York, watching people come together during the BLM protests, watching people help each other when businesses were failing, I mean, watching people come together even just to have conversations about how detrimental racism is and what we can actually do to stop it. On a local level, there is totally a tremendous feeling of community amongst the Democratic Party, however, especially among young people. But however, on a national level, nobody knows what the Democratic Party represents right now because it represents so many different things. And that's why fundamentally Joe Biden has not come to represent anything except an alternative to Trump. And now you see all of these campaigns on Instagram like settle for Biden or you know, ride in with Biden because we have to, or plan B, or he's our only option. And look, I agree with a lot of those statements. But think about that. Trump as a man stands for a set of morals and ethics that millions of people also stand for cohesively. Like I said, it's like a fraternity. Nobody knows what the fuck Joe Biden stands for aside from removing Trump from office. Not that that is a bad thing, because God knows that man needs to go. But I can understand why there is something appealing about the cohesiveness and the togetherness of the Trumpian party. I can understand that. And I saw that loud and clear at this Beverly Hills rally, which, if I am being completely honest, was like one of the best parties I've ever been to. Was it so fucked up? Yes. Was it so disturbing? Yes. Did it feel like a horror movie? Yeah. But were boomboxes playing? Yes. Was there a massive LGBTQ tent set up with house music playing out of it? Yeah. Were people running around in shirts that said fags for Trump? Yeah. Was the merch that I was seeing at all of these different stalls incredible? Were the t-shirts ridiculous but so fun? Yeah. People were honking. People were screaming. There was a massive car caravan. People are dancing, celebrating. People recognize each other from other rallies. And at one point, my friends and I got into my car and we joined the car caravan and we drove down the street. And, you know, we wanted to get B-roll footage of all of the people who were pressed up against the barricades, you know, waving their flags and their signs and stuff. And we blasted Disclosure. And I put on my American flag mask and I stuck my camera out the window. And for the 5 minutes that we were driving slowly through that caravan, we all felt like famous. We got an adrenaline rush. It was exhilarating because hundreds of people were screaming for us. It was basically like being the star of a concert. It was like being a pop star. I felt like Lady Gaga. Maybe the two of them being men felt, you know, like the two guys who make up Disclosure, but I felt like Lady Gaga. And in that moment, I really had clarity about the fact that the people who make up this party, for them, it's more than who's our president. It's feeling seen. It's feeling seen and understood and wanted and not isolated. And so my hope is that regardless of what the outcome of the election is, the Democratic Party can find a way to become a community and not just a party. A place where people can come and not be so scared of being canceled for using the wrong terminology. Being canceled for something they said 15 years ago that they have clearly learned from since. It makes me sad that Democrats feel as though they can't have open discussions with their friends and their family or even the people at the coffee shop because it's like a constant battle of who's smarter, especially white people. Educated white people are constantly trying to outschool the people who are around them. What's the point? It's one thing to share resources, but what is the point of trying to upstage your neighbor if we're all supposed to be on the same team? And you don't see that in the Trumpian party. You see support. You see them banding together only to throw hateful words at liberals. But then that's another thing, is that liberals don't take the time to understand why people support Trump. They immediately dismiss it as disgusting and fascist and embarrassing and an act of white supremacy. And I understand why all of those statements are correct. However, guys, if a Republican person came up to us, gave us a bullet point list of, you know, 10 reasons why we should become a Republican, would we do that just because they told us to? No. So how can we assume that by yelling at Trumpian people, not even presenting them with the facts, but just telling them that they're brainwashed and stupid and pea-brained and racist, regardless of whether or not they are those things, how can we expect that that is going to get us anywhere? And now the big question that I'm chewing on and I'm going to explore more next week is, how do you properly communicate with members of the opposing political party? Is it possible to, in a calm and moral and ethical way, convert someone from one political party to another? Is it possible that through meaningful, healthy dialogue, Democrats might be able to change the minds of some of the Trump supporters who are supporting him based on racism or conspiracy theories or a load of other alternative facts and fake news that's out there? Right now, this is a rhetorical question because I truly don't have the answer. I do not know that it is possible to do any of those things. But I do know that the way that both parties are approaching each other right now is not only leading to hysteria currently, but is going to escalate and become worse after the election, no matter what the outcome is. And so, like I said, my only hope is that Democrats can figure out how to facilitate a national feeling of community, and that on the flip side, Trump supporters who are supporting Trump despite outwardly not liking who he is as a man, as a person, as a father, as a leader, because he has used code words that suggest that he supports your religious feelings or that he supports you in terms of like where you come from with your ancestors. I was going to say your ethnic background, but that's not the accurate way of saying it. In terms of, you know, a so-called holy land, why are you making decisions and voting based on a land that you don't currently live in, that your children don't currently live in, that their children most likely will not live in? My only hope is that we can all stop thinking so much about ourselves and think about what the right decision is for the world as a whole, for our country as a whole, but also for the world as a whole. And I've said it once, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it 100 times. For me, Biden may not have been my first choice. I may not agree with Biden's moderacy. I wish that we lived in a world that was not so polarized. And I wish that watching the debates, the political debates, did not feel like watching MTV2. But regardless of all of that, I want to live in a world where it is not acceptable to publicly, outwardly, and frequently express hate and perform hate verbally and physically against another person for the color of their skin or for what they do and do not believe or what they want to do with their bodies. Freedom, in my mind, is not having the decision, you know, whether or not to shoot a fucking gun. Freedom is being able to live in America and be exactly who you are without fear that you might die for it. And for that reason, I am voting for Joe Biden. And I hope that if nothing else, if any of you listening to this episode are currently thinking of voting for Trump, that you may reconsider. Because it's not about you. It's not about me. It's not even about us. It's about the world as a whole. And the world that we would like to bring about for our own children if we are lucky enough to even have a world at that point. So thank you for listening. I hope that this was either comforting or enlightening to you, or, you know, maybe just provided you with some good entertainment. I hope that you have watched my video of the Trump rallies and the other videos that I have posted on Instagram. If you have questions, comments, concerns, complaints, please feel free to hit me up. My email is healthishell@gmail.com. My Instagram is @healthishell. My Twitter is @AllieWeissWorld. And my TikTok, brand new, is @AllieWeissWorld as well. I love you all. Be safe, stay strong, and I will see you.